Well, good morning, everyone here from Finland. And it's 8 a.m. here, and I know that it's the wee hours for some of you, or very early. No, I think there's one place, the South Pacific, where it's a reasonable hour. I want to welcome you to continuing with the science of triangles. This is the looks like the 7th of August, and we're continuing, I think, with number 46. I can't move around the computer too much today because I've had some stalls, and I can't uninstall it because there's a big transfer of data going on while this is happening. So it'll be a little bit more confined, and I'll just do the best I can with it. Meanwhile, I'd like to, welcome you, Anne, Annette, Barbara, Brennan, Catherine, Helen, Ishtar, Karen, Mariut, Martha, Natnia, Nienke, Tia, Tuya, Walter, Winnie, Zenaide, and Veronica. And Michael, he's up in the wee hours of the morning in Ohio or wherever, and helping make sure we get through this. Let's just, I think maybe, I just want to say to you, you do have an organizer letter somewhere. So I can try to put you on the other side. But it'll be as a panelist, and I think it may be better to stay here because then I'll know when you want to say something. Okay. Just a little alignment. In our view of the world as etherically triangular. I think that's enough for us. I don't think we need to get into the too much the interlocking circles or spheres. That day will come, but it seems more a project for the sacred planetary logoi. Right now, for us, we're interested in developing the sacredness of our planet. And that will require the bisecting the square, the triangularization, and that will operate also within our own etheric bodies, because eventually all of our chakras will be interrelated in certain ways, and finally they will be triangular. The thing about triangles is it opens the door to the soul. As I've said before, the soul is sometimes called the triangles. It also is associated with the five-pointed star, but it has that particular name. And the city that stands for square, it stands for square. That's more the personality, and we've been operating out of that a long time. And now comes the transition moment and all the difficulties inherent in that transition into the fifth kingdom of nature. So it's very interesting, when you think about where the soul is located. I guess I can try one. I hope I don't regret this. Yeah, I think I regret it already. Anyway, I'm a bit frozen here, so I shouldn't have done that. Michael and I said, "Do you want the voice of God to warn you when you're jumping around the computer?" And I said, "No, I think I can handle that." But maybe I can't. Anyway, I think I'll stick to here. The soul level is on the third subplane or the fifth. And so that includes both the five-pointed star and the triangle. So we're definitely dealing with the three and five, and we also know that when you're an accepted disciple, that the numbers three and five become very important. The third ray and the fifth ray. The path of aspiration is ruled by six and four. Devotion and conflict being resolved into harmony, and the path of initiation is ruled by rays 1 and 7, with ray 2 sort of pervading the whole process, because the science of initiation is the higher method of functioning for the second ray. He says there are seven higher and lower teaching methods, two of them for each ray, and it's really worth seeing what they are. And that can be found in the back of Esoteric Psychology, Volume 1, and probably somewhere else too. But normally, for Ray 2, there's a lot to do about religion. But the higher method is the science of initiation, and I think somehow we're engaged in that. So just a little bit of an alignment for us. And in doing this, we build up a field of consciousness which can inquire the way together. It's one of the very first requirements, to inquire the way, and which can be sensitive to the downflow of energy from some of the higher sources, certainly not all, but some of them. We can receive and understand the causative energy behind appearances. And if we really want to be students of occultism, that is what we have to do. It's not the appearance so much that counts. It's what has caused it and what the appearance is meant to embody. And we, you know, whatever line you take into esotericism, that will be a principle. What is the cause behind the appearance? DK usually calls that quality. He elaborates in Esoteric Psychology 1 on a triangle, of course, life, quality, and appearance. And when we're walking in the hall of ignorance, as we do for millions of years, we're just playing with the appearances and we don't think about what's behind it. But there are qualities and archetypes and energy configurations behind the appearance, and then the whole thing is just sustained and animated by life, whatever that really is. So blending our thought power and our presence together, we'll try to understand some of these triangles linked at the moment as they are with esoteric astrology, which he said, as I said, his most occult book, even more so than Cosmic Fire, because it deals entirely with energies. So, you know, you cannot divide studies with Master DK into little various compartments. They all are very interrelated. And when you, it's all one big book, and when you study one, you study them all. So inevitably, esoteric astrology will enter our other studies. It enters healing and psychology, and enters the initiations, and now we have it entering our triangles of studies. There's a lot of interplay going on, and as we build the rainbow bridge, we understand more and more of that interplay, and we approach what is considered to be one of our major goals on the Buddhic plane. We approach what's called pure reason. So that, you know, comes in under Mercury, especially under Mercury, but Jupiter plays its part as well. Okay, so now let's have a little reading, and then your thoughts, your questions, and, you know, we won't have a tonight. We've sent it out, or Joe has sent it out. It's necessary for me to begin the broadcast 1 hour early at 4 p.m. GMT, which will be 7 here and so forth. I have some things that have to be done, and it's all timed out. So let's get together at that time if you're coming along. And please remember, it's going to be at 4 and not at 5 p.m. GMT. By 5, it'll all be over, but you can get the video. Okay, now here we go. We're talking about a cosmic triangle. There is one triad of cosmic energy that is of supreme importance upon our planet, and it is the united influence of its three constellations, which will eventually bring about the initiation of our planetary logos. Well, at first, we might think it's, you know, simply the Great Bear, Sirius, and Pleiades, which is a supreme triangle, and certainly there's a lot of interactivity between one of the stars of the Great Bear, one of the major stars, and the Earth, and one of the major stars of the Pleiades, and the Earth, and Sirius in general, and also some of the hidden factors in the Sirius grouping. Maybe it's difficult to call it a constellation, but sometimes when DK talks about Sirius, he actually does use the word constellation. So, you know, eventually the initiation of our planetary logos. Now, if we happen to be talking about a zodiacal triangle, which we may, we have to remember that those constellations, relatively close to our solar system, but not always, those constellations are cosmic factors. There's a circle of constellations in the head, whatever the head really is, of that great being we call the one about whom naught may be said. So what is cosmic, after all? Extraplanetary is what happens when we move beyond our planet and we go into the systemic world of the other planets related to our sun. But then we leave the solar system behind and we venture extra systemically into the beginning of our cosmic environment. And that cosmic environment is just endless. And at first, it includes some local beings like a cosmic logos, which is mentioned on page 293 of Cosmic Fire. It's like made up of seven major suns. And then we go into the deep cosmos. But at first, our extra systemic venturing is going into what we might call a local cosmos. And the cosmic logoi that are found in our local vicinity. So our planetary logos is coming along, and as probably most of you know by now, it fulfills the function, major function, as the base of the spine center within the system of our solar logos. It also has a very strong etheric connection with man, providing, and all living things on our planet, providing the planetary prana and making it possible for extra solar prana to enter. So when will this sacred planet be a sacred planet? This is a interiorly sacred planet. When will it be sacred? It won't be for millions and millions of years in my calculation, but there will be a big improvement coming quite shortly. The judgment day is coming. And at that time, it's not like let's just say that when certain religions talk about God's judgment and the judgment day, they're just talking about a little anticipation of that great day when the sheep and the goats are really separated. We might say the sheep will be aligned with Aries at that time, and the goats will be aligned with Capricorn. And there will be a big separation. And it may well be, it's going to be apparently in the fifth round, and we're in the fourth round now. And not until then, I think, will our planetary logos take his second cosmic initiation. And that'll be a big step. But before he does that, certain lesser initiations, such as the one we're going through on this planet right now, will have to take place. And it's a very drastic experience that we're going through. Everything really is heating up, and it's not just the aggravation that misunderstanding man has brought to the situation. There is that, you know, and we fill the air with carbon dioxide, and we cut off the sources of oxygen, and there are many ways in which we prevent the health of this planet, but there's more going on than that at this present time. So we're on our way to help render our planet sacred. And, a planetary round can take a long time. Something, you know, Blavatsky is telling us 311 million years, something like that. And we're talking about life in the next round. And if you study the cycles, you will see that after every active part of a round, there's a latent part, which is like a twilight, and you kind of go to sleep, or the planet goes to sleep, and it's in the state of obscuration. Quite a number of the planets are in a state of obscuration. Right now, Mars is, for instance, and then it just seems that life has disappeared from a planet, but it hasn't really at all. It's just in that passive stage, waiting to reemerge in the active stage. But anyway, sacredness for our planet, we can't pontificate about this, okay? But sacredness for our planet may be a long time ahead. And inwardly, the earth is already sacred. Okay, at present, our earth is not regarded as a sacred planet. The non-sacred planets, Earth, Mars, Pluto, and two planets veiled by respectively the Sun and the Moon. There's a second-ray planet veiled by the Sun. There's a fourth-ray planet veiled by the Moon. And some have speculated that the planet veiled by the Moon, quite invisible, we don't know where to look for it, but maybe it's been photographed. It's called Rex, the king of the planets, Rex. So we don't know much about those two planets. We just know that the Sun and Moon are not actually the sources of some of this non-sacred energy. So at present, our Earth is not regarded as a sacred planet. And later, when these three energies, whatever they are here that he's going to be talking about, have produced adequate effect, and when the needed planetary changes have been produced, the term sacred will be deemed correct and appropriate, and we will have also, by that time, an etheric body filled with triangles. This statement, of course, means little to any student at this time, that the term one day of sacredness will be deemed correct. When, however, he is able factually to realize two things, the case will be different. Now, what are the two things he has to realize? Number one, first, that the threefold energies which lie back of the activity of the center at Shambhala, well, we've been through this. You know, there's a sixfold progression. Begins with the Great Bear. It goes to Leo. Then it goes to Saturn. Then it comes into Shambhala. And from Shambhala, it affects the head center of the human being and also the base of the spine center. So basically, I've mentioned what we have studied earlier, a sixfold transformational descent. Now, we can do that with Sirius, and we can do that with the Pleiades, too. So, the threefold energies, you've got a triangle here. One of the triangles, Great Bear, Leo, Saturn, possibly, concern the planetary logos. It's very high there, and one of the great mistakes that students make concerns their sense of proportion. They think they are more advanced than they are, and that they can deal with energies which pertain to much greater entities than they are, such as, in this case, the planetary logos. Slowly, we're getting there. Humanity is slowly becoming sensitive to that influence, but only in mass formation and not individually. The mass can take certain applications of energy which would be impossible to receive by the individual. So only theoretically can a disciple take note of this fact. And maybe, you know, you almost have to be a Chohan in Shambhala to really realize what's going on, but these things are possible. Think of it. Now, it's 2,000 years approximately since the now Master Jesus went through all of that incredible cooperation with the Christ. Before that, he was, now he is a sixth degree initiate. He was a fifth degree initiate when he worked through the body of Apollonius of Tyana. He was a fourth degree initiate when he was taking the crucifixion. He was a third degree initiate when he was Joshua the high priest. And he was a second degree initiate when he was Joshua the general who commanded the Hebrew forces in ancient Canaan, Palestine at that time. Now, that's only been approximately 3,000 years that brought the initiate Jesus at the second degree as Joshua all the way to Chohanship today. So, you know, when we think of 3,000 years, it seems a long time, but compared to the millions and millions of years that each one of us has been progressing ever so slowly, this is a very rapid asymptote, you know, very rapid climb up the axis. And that's what's lying ahead of many of us, because look, the great majority of students of the Tibetan in his small groups, they were aiming at the second degree. It wasn't far ahead. And then now the initiatory possibilities are even more rapid. And it is said that many initiates of the fifth degree will be needed. Now, we don't want to exaggerate. We don't want to inflate. But we can say that the pressure is on, and if we study properly, meditate properly, serve properly in these very rapidly moving times, chances are that these higher initiations will be open to us because there is a need, not because we're nice, good disciples and all that, but because there is a need. Anyway, some of these higher sources concern the planetary logos, but humanity is becoming sensitive to them. There's quite a number of triangles implied in this little section. So what are we looking at here? The student will realize two things, and one of them is that a great triplicity of energies lies behind him. And there's a couple of these triplicities. There's the triplicity of triangle, of Great Bear, Sirius, and Pleiades, or Great Bear, Little Bear, and Pleiades. Then there's Great Bear, Leo, and Saturn. And that's a triangle behind Shambhala. So what you always want to know is what particular triangle empowers any particular source. Now, we have an interesting triangle, Aries-Pluto-Shambhala. It's not part of this sequence. And it has moved down just a little bit. It doesn't include the Great Bear. But the Great Bear is very much related to Aries. And if we went, for instance, now here, Michael, I hope I'm not going to do anything that I really regret. But if we go to page 50 in the book Esoteric Astrology, and I'm going to see it. I'm going to see that indeed the Great Bear is related to Aries and to Libra, and to Vulcan. So that's another one of those shambolically impressive triangles. And we did just recently go through these three triangles, and we went through the magnetic energy of the seven solar systems, which were Taurus, Scorpio, and Mars, okay, in which our sun is a heart center. Now we're on to something else. And let's see what that something else is. Okay, we'll go ahead. We as students of occultism, we're becoming aware first of these big triangles of energies that are behind Shambhala, behind our planetary logos and so forth. What else? Second, these influences are playing upon that aspect of human life which we call the monad. We as a monad, we are in a way resident in the Shambhala energy. So these energies we're talking about, these influences, these very high influences, have steadily increasing effect upon the path of initiation because the monad gets stronger and stronger. Now, you know, jumping to the monad is something people love to do before it is warranted. They say, oh, look, there's a triangle there in my astrological chart. Look at my sun sign. Look at my rising sign. Look at the point opposite my sun sign. And what we discover is that's a triangle of energy with the sun sign representing the personality, the rising sign temporarily emphasizing the soul, and you guessed it, the point opposite the sun represents the monad. But what if you're not ready to deal with that factor in your life that you call the monad? What if it happens that you're simply integrating your personality, or maybe you're learning the first steps of relating to the soul? The readiness has to be there before some of these relationships really click into effectiveness. So, but these big influences, they really are playing on the monad. Even the whole zodiac in the head of the one about whom naught may be said plays upon the monad. There's different ways that the zodiac of constellations plays. One upon the monad, two upon the soul, three upon the personality. And in every case, the influence is different. Now, this may all seem quite intricate, you know, lots of little ins and outs. But once you become accustomed to the language and start using it, it will become much easier to grasp. So these big influences like Great Bear, Pleiades, Sirius, once you've taken the first large initiation, first real initiation, which is the third, those influences are going to become more and more powerful. And I dare say the same would be true of Leo, Saturn, and Shambhala, or of Great Bear, Leo, and Saturn. And you know, it's good to go out on a starry night sometime when the, you know, weather is good. You see the summer sky, no matter what hemisphere you're in, and just take it in. No, don't pass it by. Those are great lives that are in process of radiating their nature to all around, and we happen to be mostly in their environment. As far as deep space goes, the telescopes discover that's another matter. There are other environments, but there's probably about 3,000-something naked-eye stars. So if you can see them, they're going to be effective in our local cosmos. They're not all that far away. You need a telescope to do that. And just take it in. And you know, realize you're in the presence of living great sources. Master Moria says, if you want to benefit from the little book of daring that he writes, you'll say to those sources, "Hail, brothers." And then he says later that in that salutation of daring, his ego vanished, his lower ego. Well, anyway, these constellations are not, it turns out, Great Bear, Sirius, Pleiades. They are zodiacal constellations, and they're very important for our planetary logos. Now, I think we went through it just a little before, and I'll ask you that question again. Leo, Virgo, Pisces. Well, I think we did it, you know. Leo is many things, all the way from the lowly personal ego, the lower self, from which we are to remove our gaze, take our eyes off the lower personal self. So it says here, that which knows. They are spoken of the producer of that which knows. And remember the fivefold sequence that appears in the very last rule in Raised and Initiations. Know is the very first one. Express the monad. Reveal the monad. Know, express, reveal. Destroy at a certain point, not just the causal body, but the monadic vehicle, and resurrect, rise onto the logoic plane, into the sea of fire. That's a fivefold sequence, and in a way, Leo begins it. So, Leo, Virgo, and Pisces, I think you can kind of see their interrelation is very important relation. There's so many Leo people that are just solidly convinced that their personality is all there is. And there's others that are great initiates. I think Aurobindo, and I'm thinking of some of the ones in India, very powerful, Leo. But Leo being used on an entirely higher point of the spiral. The producer of that which knows. So consciousness and sensitivity, these are found there. Then the informers, and note, there's a plural here. It's kind of interesting. It's as if any constellation or sign of the zodiac is made up of many beings, not just one. There is a great cosmic Lord behind the whole thing, but then there are many and diverse beings within it, and that's the reason for the plural. The informers of that which is awakened, pretty much Virgo, and the Christ consciousness will be brought in, and the constructors. Now this is a, you know, this is one of those phrases by the Tibetan where you say, hey, what did he really mean there? The constructors of the modes of fusing wisdom. What could that mean? Well, he does talk about Jupiter in Pisces as related to all-pervading wisdom. And when wisdom is truly released, it will begin to be a factor which brings about first integration and then fusion in the various parts of the surroundings, both systemic and local cosmic, with which we must deal. I'm pretty sure it's Pisces. The constructors of the modes of fusing wisdom. There are all kinds of ways of bringing these factors together in Pisces, which can be such an intuitive sign, seems to know them. And then DK goes on and elaborates a little more about these three. See, it's all about the Christ consciousness, isn't it? You know, when it comes down to the level of the human being, this particular triangle is about the self-conscious man moving into the dualism of higher self and lower self, and we know that Virgo carries that dualism with it, and even a triplicity of father, mother, and the child. But the duality is here emphasized. And then finally Pisces, which makes it all one. And one of those modes of fusing wisdom is the discipline of identification, which we're going into more and more in our identity as being group. We had a meeting last night, some of you were there, and we tried to penetrate these matters and to make them real to us. So they produce unity. Now, that's what Leo does. It can be a lower unity, a unity simply based upon the integration of the personality, which is not yet awakened to the Sphinx. The Sphinx is the head of the woman and the body of the lion. So right there, there is soul and personality, because the personality is called, and this you should remember, the King of Beasts. The King of Beasts, and so it has to be related to the 666 of Mars. So these three, lying behind our planet and lying behind humanity, they produce a unity through Leo, and they shatter. Now, you don't usually think about Virgo as being a very shattering kind of sign, but apparently it is. They shatter that which they have produced, only again to produce it in greater beauty and wider fullness. So we've got kind of a reincarnational thing going there. And let's remember that that nice sign Virgo, full of criticism, of course, has Vulcan as the esoteric ruler. The moon is veiling Vulcan. And when you want something shattered, call Vulcan in. It has the hammer to do the job. So it's always shattering so that consciousness can expand. See, I'm elaborating here just on one little triangle, but a very important one behind our planetary logos, and behind humanity as a whole, and behind every one of us as we seek to move from concentration in Leo through eight steps around the zodiac into identification in Pisces. So there will be beauty, greater beauty, and wider fullness. These words are clear. This triangle is, at this time, an inverted one. See, the triangles continue to rotate, don't they? Just like when we're doing the triangles meditation, DK had that person invert the triangle and notice the presence of the solar angel and Master DK on the same level, but it was inverted with the effect below. So these words are clear. This triangle is, at this time, an inverted one with Leo energies. Notice this. With Leo energies in the closest contact with our planetary life. Now, we're told elsewhere that Leo is the most human of all the signs. I suppose it has something to do with individualization and the different states of identity. I am that, I am that, and that am I. And then maybe this last one, which DK doesn't really give, I am that I am. You know, Moses asked God, what is your name? And God answered, I am that I am. Now that requires a lot of interpretation, and it's basically telling us he is what he is, or God is what it is, and is unique in that respect. And we're not going to be able to describe our planetary deity in the customary words. So Leo energies then become the closest for contact within our planetary logos. And the following triangle will show this. It's just like the triangle that we use when we do that morning preparation with DK that involves triangles. Notice that they meet in Leo, okay, but there's a tripod below Leo that supports it. And to me, this tells me that a kind of a trinity of energies does make its impact on humanity. Now, what would we do without the Sphinx to ask us those questions? You know, the question of the Sphinx, it's a great know thyself question. What goes on four legs in the morning, two legs in the afternoon, and three legs in the evening? And obviously, well, maybe obviously to one who knows the answer is man. Crawling like a baby, walking like a man, and having a staff to hold him up, making three when he is older. So the whole thing is, know thyself. That's what the Sphinx was trying to tell us. And the Leo-Virgo relationship does begin to give us that. Now let's see if there's... These three are definitely connected definitely and increasingly with the unfoldment of human consciousness in the three main aspects. And here's the thing, of course. Are you a unified, integrated human being under Leo? Yes. Are you a dualistic human being with a higher and lower self, a higher power and a lower power under Virgo? Yes. And have you put it all together? And are you saved? You know, Harold and I, when we were doing music, we always had a joke, you know, the old machines, you could easily lose a half hour, an hour of work because there was no automatic saving. So Harold, you know, was brought up in a fundamentalist background, and I'm always saying to him, Harold, are you saved? Which would mean, of course, you know, has he pressed the button to save the music, but it had that other connotation, you know, are you saved? And, of course, there's a lower interpretation of being saved. And the churches and, you know, it's sort of filled with people who are, in general, not philosophically inclined, they have to be... They conceive of saving in an entirely different way than we do. Our method of being saved is through consciousness and the development of the higher will, which we surrender to a still higher will. This is salvation, and this is Pisces. Father, not my will, but thine be done. So these three are connected. They're behind the planetary logos, helping to make of it a sacred planet, where we learn. That doesn't mean that Great Bear, Sirius, and Pleiades are not involved. Still further back they are, but these three zodiacal constellations is one of those triangles which DK says, I can talk to you about this. This is one of the ones that is really effective, maybe on another planet. Different triangle would be effective. There is the development of self-consciousness to be fostered, takes a long time before we're self-conscious. And this is the major effect, as you well know, as well you know, of the force of Leo, self-consciousness. So we may have to go through some incarnations where we are very sensitive about our apparent self, and we get to know that self. The influence of this constellation aids in the manifestation of individual will. Now, when you look at, let's see if I get lost here again. Okay. I won't have Michael to come and save me because he warned me. He warned me. Let's see what we have here. Notice that Ray 1 does operate through Leo, along with Aries and Capricorn. So Leo is not just a Ray 1, it's a Ray 5 constellation, Ray 1 and 5. Okay. So it forms the egoistic principle, and so many of us have not overcome that. Individual will, individual love, individual intelligence, we don't yet have, and we will have, in the Thou Art That stage, we will have group intelligence. And in the I Am, I am that stage, okay? That can mean a lot of things, you know, even very, very high things. But I am that and that I am, that's the will, the love, and the intelligence of the One. So individual is the main term, and if you really look at it, it means not divisible. And that has great implications, that a great source such as the essential man is not divisible. Okay, Leo, it fosters the ahamkara, or egoistic principle, the I amness. It produces the emphasis upon the I am attitude, which is so necessary a stage before the individual can merge himself as a conscious self, capital, conscious self-respecting unit in the whole. Self-respecting is an interesting word. It means, you know, you kind of know your purpose, you know your function, and you approve of how you are doing. But behind this influence and pressing through into manifestation, just like the woman is on top of the Sphinx, is the force of Virgo, the mother or custodian of the Christ consciousness, which, now this nice Christ consciousness, which shatters the Christ consciousness, which shatters eventually the synthesis and the lower unity already produced by the Leo energy. So it's like, oh, I want to show it to you, but just try to remember the egoic lotus. For millions of years, you're wandering around in the first three petals. Those petals are the hall of ignorance. And then something comes in which shatters that ignorance, and you step into the hall of learning with the next three petals. And you know what's really interesting? If you look at the petals of knowledge, the ignorance petals, you might say, as ruled by earth signs, then the order is Capricorn first, Taurus next, Virgo the third. So Virgo is there shattering ignorance and allowing you to step into the hall of learning. And probably many of you have that experience. We all do, I think. One day we just decided we could really learn something deeper. Okay, so this Christ consciousness, this Virgo energy shatters. eventually the synthesis and the lower unity already produced by the Leo energy. Now, you know, Leo is like a temple. And eventually, after a temple has really, really done its work, the temple is destroyed and a new state of freedom, maybe a new temple, is entered. Okay, it stimulates the soul within the form as well as the soul within each atom of the form. It's the anima mundi. Virgo is intimately connected with the soul of the world, which is not just the human soul, but also within the atom of substance. Because the genius and uniqueness of Virgo is that it produces the form as well as stimulates the life within the form, and therefore nourishes the two lives. And we can say even more about it. We can say, I am the mother, the matter, and the child, the form, the Christ consciousness, and also I, God, I, matter, am. In other words, I'm father, and I'm mother, and I'm also the child that is the result. It is a powerful dual energy, a potent expression of the anima mundi, or the soul of the world, and it was the recognition of this which made the ancient astrologers, ancient, we don't know how ancient, first merge Virgo and Leo into one sign, later separate them again, so nourishing the two aspects of the soul. So it's both the soul of matter and the soul of man. Then, as the dualism of the human spirit, spirit-matter, became a fact in the consciousness of man, the sign was divided into two signs. So there was the man and the beast, and the beast in this case was Leo, the 666, the king of beasts. And the war between the opposites, which we have all felt as we, the personality, are fighting against our soul-inspired conscience, and the war of the pairs of opposites became a war with purpose. And Arjuna had the purpose, and he won at the Battle of Kurukshetra, and is incidentally reaching its climax today, because this is just a continuation of the battle. This fact will be obvious to all true esotericists. Now, I'm going to leave Pisces, which is the summation. I've certainly talked long enough, and I don't want to I'll begin with Pisces. Usually you never do, except, you know, there's an interesting thing. We often hear that the first incarnation of man took place in Cancer, but that apparently, according to the Tibetan, is a group statement and has to do with the group of human beings that were seeking incarnation at that time. From the individual perspective, he seems to be saying, and it still has to be clarified, that Pisces represents for the individual the very first incarnation, individually considered, go forth into matter. Pisces. Okay. So I just want to, okay, what page are we on, Michael? Do you know?
We're ending on page 471.
Got it. Okay, very good. And where did we begin? Let's see if I can. I mean, I was kind of determined to do more than one page or two pages. It looks like 469. We did two pages. All right. 469 to 471. Now, look, you know, why are we going in this way? It's so that you can get a sense, all of us really, because every time I study, I learn more, you know, and you'll find that for yourself. Get a sense of what is meticulous entirety. What is this ability to cultivate the pure reason within our nature? So this is, today is the 7th of August, 2019, and we're ending on page 471, and we'll begin number 47. And that's, let's see if we can do it. Yeah, it's the 14th, and of course the full moon will be coming in there, and the pre-full moon. So if we do this, we'll talk about when it will be, because we always, pretty much always do the pre-full moon at night, and then give about a half a day or a day before the actual full moon with Tuya is broadcast. All right, so this is a 46, this is a 47, and this is the 7th of August, and we will see where this goes, 471, and this will be Wednesday evening. Sorry to take a little time doing this, but I find that the housekeeping is needed. Okay. Okay. All right, we're good. Now, what have we studied? We've studied Leo. We've studied Virgo. Maybe those are signs important in your chart. We've studied a little bit about the modes of fusing wisdom, which lead to oneness and identification in Pisces eventually, even though it might be the very first incarnation that animal man undertakes in an individual way. You might say that Jonah in the Bible gets swallowed by the whale. Now, you know, Jonah turns out to be a pretty hungry entity later, and then he swallows the whale in reverse. But it takes a while to be in the belly of the beast, as it were. So we'll deal with this other later. Do you have any questions or comments about this, or things about occultism that you would like to either ask or discuss? If there is anything, I'm going to look for you to raise your hand. And I know I have Tuya on this side, or unless she's been put on the other side. Maybe something happened there. No, there you are. So, but I'll leave you there because I think I can see better. Any thoughts? Now, usually Vera leads off. I know that must put a shock through you, Vera, but I can usually depend on you to ask a question or offer a comment. So am I putting you on the spot? I hope so. There you go. Okay. Okay.
I think one of the last sessions, somebody mentioned 5G networks using wireless sort of technology. And for me, it was like a wow, because I never realized that these forces are devic forces. Yep. And I am just wondering if you can sort of enlarge on that a little bit. My mind is too making divisions. And like today, when we read, the monad resides in Shambhala. Yeah. To me, it was, wow! Because in my mind, it resides on the chart.
Yes.
Which means
Home sweet home, home sweet home. Yeah, well, yeah, and of course, the monad is a fluid point of view. You know, to Leibniz, the monad was a point of view, and he looked at it as utterly individual rather than the way that we're trying to look at it. But the monad has its ability to rise into ever greater spaces. It has its own sort of permanent temple for some millions of years on the second subplane, and it also descends. In other words, there are rays of the monad which are basically creating the soul with the help of the solar angel. And when you go down into the personality and the etheric body, the influence of the monad is also there. So, as usual, I'm emphasizing the many places something might be, but essentially its home is on that second subplane, which is an aspect of Shambhala. Now, the other part that you were asking about 5G. Now, look, you know, I'm not the technical person, but they are, a lot of people are concerned about this because DK said there will be many, I'm not sure he used the word deaths or tragedies, but the idea of many disruptions in the life of man and, you know, compromising the health because of exposure to certain Devic forces in an unconscious way. And I think we're entering into that more and more. I still am appalled by the picture that's more than 100 years old of these, all these women with their bare hands just picking up the radioactive isotopes, radioactive substance. This was in the days of Madame Curie. Nobody had any idea that you could have radiation poisoning and all that kind of thing. And we're heading into a period when these Devic forces are getting stronger and stronger, and we still don't even know what they are. We have some hints. There are elemental forces. There are, you know, transmitting and building and, oh, something else in there, too. Usually when it comes to Deva kind of things, I turn to Tuya. Tuya, is there any way, would you like to address yourself to this, to the release of these Devic forces and what they might do with man? I'm not sure that you're there right now. I know there's a lot of, yeah, there you are.
I am here.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. I have been moving also, but in principle, as I was saying, that we should start to understand that there is nothing without Devic activity. So whatever we do, it produces some activity in Deva kingdom and also vice versa, because we are built from these substances. Everything what we can think about the lower 18 subplanes are built from the earlier solar system, and that's why they have a particular consciousness as well in them. The matter that we are built from has a certain consciousness. All of these different vibrations, all of these different qualities that we are supposed to build up into another one. So we are supposed to become more refined and more functional from the point of view first for the soul. And of course, then we become more functional from the point of view of the monad, that the monad can use us. If you think about Sanat Kumara cannot descend lower than etheric plane, meaning that his consciousness or his the point of evolution is in that place that it cannot use even the lower matter. For us, it is like the opposite, that we should build within us all the time more and more refined energies and refined matter, meaning then the devic lives, elemental lives within us, which makes then the vehicles much more potent and much more suitable for the purposes of the monad and purposes that in that sense for the soul.
You know,
yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that we would, it's only that principle that we would start to understand that it's our responsibility what kind of quality we have in our vehicles. And if that quality is bad, it's like that if we need to hammer and we have a plastic hammer, it cannot stand the iron nail.
Mm-hmm.
So we are supposed to become more and more refined in our vehicles so that we can be used within those higher and higher vibrational energies which are pouring now via the Shambhala. And this new plans for humanity, the new, it's the same purpose, but there are steps in that plan that at the moment, like when we think about the new Global World Servers, we need to understand ourselves being a part of that. And that group is preparing now to take a lot of more responsibilities upon the earth, not only in the inner planes, how the masters are functioning, but upon the earth, that we can take over these downpouring energies from Shambhala and start to work for the Christ down here. And that's why the refining and building better vehicles is so important. Mm. Hopefully it answered something.
Yes, I agree with you very much. You know, there have been lately some films and reports about how dangerous unprepared exposure to the Deva Kingdom is. Now, if you read, for instance, occultly, if you read the rules of white magic, he's giving you all kinds of mantras as you descend to protect yourself. In the early days of the cell phones, those were very, very big, and people would hold them to their heads, and the matter was affected, and they got brain cancer. When it comes to the power of some of these networks now, there are some sensitive people, you know, see, I can't live under these great big electrical lines. They really are, they're making my life impossible. They're the sensitive ones, and they are poo-pooed, and no, well, you don't know what you're talking about, but it is. Those are uncontrolled Devic forces. Now, what will the 5G bring? I don't know enough about it, but it's in the same direction.
Yeah.
That we don't know what we're dealing with yet, and we have to find out. And there'll be a lot of tragedies at first, and then eventually we're going to learn over the Aquarian age how to rightly relate to the elemental and Deva kingdoms. So yeah, that's mm-hmm. what that was all about, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. And I'm taking from this conversation that in my mind, I should always remind myself, fluidity of consciousness, not separate categories, would be too easy.
Well, you know,
thank you.
You know what I think about synthesis?
Yeah.
I think that the fifth ray is very needed at first to polish up the things that have to be put together. You know, like if you just say, let's make a synthesis, and you throw a lot of ununderstood things together, you just have a mess. You don't have a synthesis. But if you examine carefully the factors that have to be united or to be seen as united, then you will have an articulated synthesis. And it's the real thing, and it's not just thrown together factors. So the fifth ray is a tremendous, important preparation for the right kind of synthesis, I believe, anyway. Be happy about your fifth ray, and and remember, three minds unite, you know, under the fifth ray.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Ishtar, we have something. Okay, Ishtar. May I ask, are some of these Devic beings? Oh yeah. They're all over. Different kinds of beings. I tell you what, Cosmic Fire is the great book to read when it comes to where, what they are, and where they reside. And to be sure that you're getting accuracy, it's a very glamorous subject, you know, and people go off on all kinds of tangents. So the astral plane is especially one of those ones where the Agni Surians can drain your astral body of all of its substance and cause death, the necessity of the soul to snap the cord when the magician has not properly protected himself. Negative and positive beings? Yes, definitely. And let me turn to white magic in the hope that I can get there. It's beginning to operate a little better. And it's right there in the beginning, the rules for magic for the astral plane begin on number 7. Okay, and I'm just trying to, you see, two different paths face the solar angel, and one is the right-hand path and one is the left-hand, and they are accompanied by different Devic forces. So all of this that goes on, but I'm looking for the one where you protect yourself. Here it is. I think one of them, at least one of them. Three things the worker with the law must now accomplish. First, ascertain the formula which will confine the lives within the ensphering walls. So you have to build your own form and not have it mixed with other things. This is one place. Next, okay, the final one, after you pronounce the words and tell the devas where to carry that which has been made, and finally, look at this here, utter forth the mystic phrase which will save him from their work. And he talks about many magicians have died in this way, not knowing the proper formula. And here, up on number 8, there's something similar. Let the magician guard himself from drowning at the point where land and water meet. Maybe he's going to be overcome by the Devic forces associated with the solar plexus. So buried in here and elaborated upon are many of these safeguards that we have to exercise. That's why Race 7, you know, has got to be so exact. You are dealing with something that is really life and death. Not only is it life and death for the form you're trying to create, but it's life and death for the creator. And if he violates the rules, does not know the proper mantrams, does not utter forth the protective phrases, those devas don't know any better. They're going to do what is natural and instinctual because they are the unself-conscious devas. They are the ones that simply have consciousness but not self-consciousness, and they will release those Agni Surians, and there will be chaos on the astral plane and death.
Michael, one thing while you are talking about that, just came to my mind when we think about the transmission from the plane to plane. It goes via the atomic plane, and that's why the radioactivity is the phenomenon what appears then when we move from the other plane to another. And that's why it brings us to a question that when humanity is dealing with the atomic power, that it has to have some connotation to the initiation at the same time that we are learning those rules.
This is very true. Now look, there's a great reversal in estimation going on. man and every being that is getting ready to change kingdoms is supposed to become radioactive. Radioactive, of course, in the sense that applies to that particular kingdom. It's not the same necessarily as the radioactivity of the mineral kingdom. But we measure things in reverse. We say that radioactivity was stronger in the past, and we can tell how old a thing is by the diminishment of radioactivity. And it's exactly the opposite. As we become more and more evolved, there's more and more radioactivity, and the newer substances are the ones that have evolved and are displaying a great deal of radioactivity, and they've come up from the other substances. So we want to be, if I can put it this way, we want to be the radioactive human being. And when we are the radioactive human being, it shows you that we are ready to move into the fifth kingdom of nature. The radioactive animal is ready to have a mind. The radioactive plant is ready to have mobility. And the radioactive mineral, well, he says, you know, in between each kingdom, there are certain forms with which science is not familiar that are partial forms. They have characteristics of one kingdom, characteristics of another kingdom, and they are intermediary forms which help you move from one to another. Now, in every case, an increasing degree of radioactivity is found, but we have to define radioactivity in terms of the level of the kingdom. It's not going to all be what the mineral radioactivity is, though that shows you a movement into a higher kingdom. Anyway, we have a lot to learn. I remember I saw a movie. You know, I learn a lot from the movies. It was about a Russian submarine. And it was really undergoing, it was an atomic submarine. It was undergoing a meltdown of their, of what drove the submarine, which was, you know, a radioactive sort of plant inside the submarine. And there was no way for it. It was going to explode with an atomic explosion if it wasn't neutralized. And the young men in there, they volunteered, and they went in one after another for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and tried to separate out the things that showed the danger of explosion. When they came out, after just a few minutes, they were totally destroyed. The shaking, on the point of death, they had been invaded by the radioactivity in a very strong manner. And I remember something similar too with John Cusack, and it was the story of the atomic bomb, and there had been an error in the preparation of the materials, and he did a quick calculation of the people who had been involved. He says, you're okay, you'll live. As for me, I'm dead. So he knew how much of a dose could be taken. Now, right now, humanity doesn't know what kind of dose it can take in so many Davic areas. That's why this first-ray thing is called the power that touches and then withdraws. And it doesn't stay touching. It only gives you a certain amount that the form can take. So that's going to be a big area of knowledge in the Aquarian Age. Okay. Anything else, friends? I think I have your thoughts.
Ishtar wrote another comment.
I experienced the close death, have learned and am protected through a process that took you. Okay. As long as we know what we're doing, you know, in the old days of a magician drawing a circle around his process is, as DK says, the the opened magical circle, the unclosed magical circle, and the open pentagram are areas of great danger. And he tries to tell us that if we really knew the actual glyph of the sign constellation Capricorn, we wouldn't know how to handle it, because it lets in even more energy than the unopened pentagram. So, okay, caution, and the most cautious of all the rays, the seventh ray, has to be operative to do things with precision on the physical plane, so that when the higher forces are evoked, they will not destroy. Right now, I mean, you know, this old Atlantean stuff, I read recently, and you probably know it, you've seen it, that they're putting human cells into rats and pigs and sheep. They're making hybrids. Now, they say, oh, well, we don't go so far as to really change the embryo that is going to result. We're making the embryo so that new organs can be built which have enough of the human substance in them not to be rejected and to be useful to those people who need new valves, even, well, who knows, entirely new organ, who knows, entirely new heart. But the danger, I think you can see it. There was a, well, you know, you think I'm always in the movie theater, but I'm not. I'm really not. But I remember what I see. And I think there was a movie called Splice, something like that. And it was all about combining the genetics of a human being and a cat. And what resulted was quite a horrific type of being. Now, you go back to Atlantis. This was one of the abuses for which Atlantis was brought down, the creation of slave races that would serve human beings in an unjustified manner, and all out of all cooperation with the divine plan. And when I saw, oh, I said, the fifth ray, here we go. Unless the fifth ray is guided by the ray of law, seventh ray, the ray of will and purpose, first ray, the ray of compassion, second ray, a lot of trouble can result. And we're just on the borderland of the repeating of the old Atlantean sins, which is a violation of the forms which the human race is supposed to take. So we esoterically inclined people, we have a lot of educating to do so people realize what is the danger. So if you know something that works, that's good. You know, it's all practical. What works? What really works? And then we get into the why of it. And that's very important, of course. Thank you, Ishtar. Okay. All right. So just a little bit. A very little bit. Because this evening, this afternoon, at 4 o'clock, if all goes well, we'll be broadcasting the normal triangle meditation. But just think of humanity and yourself and your groups triangulated within the body of humanity. And realize that this Triangles Network, it's much more than simply human. It's having to do with the planetary etheric body. And the other planets, especially the sacred planets, have the triangle formation too, and just the way we can go from continent to continent as we think of others and unite with them, some can go from planet to planet. And triangles would be formed that way by the higher beings. So these chakras of the solar logos, namely the planets, are being connected with each other in triangular form and with the logos, moving relentlessly towards bringing the solar system into the condition that it must be to move on to the next level of development. So we have to realize that this triangulation really extends a long way. In our local seven systems, of which ours is one, there's triangulation between the stars. I just bet there's a strong triangulation between Sirius, Procyon, and our sun, Helios, or soul, whatever we want to call it. Just the triangles that appear in the etheric body of man are also going to appear on a higher turn of the spiral in solar systems. And in those bigger solar systems that cosmic logoi use. And I wouldn't be surprised if triangulations exist uniting galaxies in the web of space. So just kind of think about how extensive this triangulation really is. Well, it goes out there, and the whole web of space, of course, that's a project of the greater beings. And our job is to make humanity soul responsive through this work which must go on. And so the triangulation helps us access energies we need for the evolution of humanity and the evolution of the planets, both. Just get an idea, reflect upon the vastness of it all. And we're kind of in on the ground floor, you know, where self-conscious beings somewhat developed, and we can begin this process, which makes the universe sacred eventually. And we realize that if we are acute enough in our understanding, we can really participate in this and help good things happen. So what I'd like to do to close, let's say the great invocation this afternoon at 4 o'clock and not 5 o'clock GMT. We have the broadcast. We'll let you know about full moons coming up, and there is a pretty strong possibility that, let's see about Saturday, whether there can be a broadcast or not. I'm traveling, and Tui and I will try to work something out, but we'll let you know. Okay, so put yourself on self-mute, and we will think about this triangle of light, love, and power. And we can see that it can work out, you know, a triangle above, like this coming down, working out within humanity. There's lots of triangles we can make out of this invocation. So here we go. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Thank you. And this afternoon, and ongoingly until we notify you that travel days may be. Something's going on there. Okay. Bye bye. See you now.